Okay, we're going to do a little review of 2012, of course, John Hoag's prophecy, but he's on tonight to talk about 2013, and we'll get right into it on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Hoag writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy, considered a world authority in Nostradamus, best-selling author as well. His work has brought him international acclaim. He's been on Coast to Coast for, gosh, many, many years now. He was just with me on Beyond Belief and, of course, was on our Mayan calendar Friday night show on December 21st as well, where his thoughts of nothing was going to happen was absolutely spot on. John Hoag back on Coast to Coast as we take a little look at 2013. Hey, John, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. You know, just watching all the interesting developments with the fiscal cliff. And having quite an interesting astrological signature. The more and more people are in astrology and political astrology are beginning to accept that the American natal chart has a Scorpio rising, our totem being the bald eagle and some other numbers. The eagle is the higher aspect of Scorpio. People often think, well, Scorpio is not really an American sign. But then again, when you think about our infatuation with the sexuality, which came up with the sexual revolution, if you also see the lower aspects of Scorpio are the warrior, and we have this huge standing armed forces in the world as a superpower, military superpower, more people in my field are starting to belly up to the reality that Scorpio is rising. The reason why I'm saying all this is I'm just checking my astrological charts and realizing that Saturn, you know, has returned into Scorpio in October. It'll be there till the end of December. And it's actually exactly transited in the last 2 weeks with all of this mess happening in Washington right into the natal position of 8 degrees, Scorpio rising. And it just today moved out, pretty much just today, and it's going to come back backwards into the whole area around April and May, and they'll go forward again over the ascendant. What that means in layman's terms, they'll do it in September, October, is we've just went through one situation where the can was kicked down the road a little farther. Some compromises on both sides, but basically we're all waiting for another big cliffhanger a couple months from now.
That's right. It'll happen.
And so, but I'm saying after that, in April and May, that is when you really see some stuff happen with it. Because what's intriguing about Scorpio, and this is the definition of the book that I'm still writing that I'll have finished probably at the end of January, which is my forecast for the coming year. I was made a little late with 2012 and the Iran book and a few other things, but I'll at least get it in for the Chinese New Year. And this if I were to define 2013, I would define it as the year of the bill, when the bill came. If I were European bankers and American bankers and American politicians finding a new way to kick the can down the road, 2012 is a cul-de-sac. It's a wall in the timeline. It's a place where the can bounces back in your face. And you have to deal with the things that Saturn and Scorpio deal with, especially when our ascendant, the way we express ourselves in the world as a country, is involved. I mean, it's the sign of financial affairs, of corporate resources, how we use them, partners' finances, of taxes. Tax reform or the lack thereof is going to be a major issue in this year. It's about inheritances. It's about insurance. And, you know, a lot of American people are wondering if they are insured a functional democracy or if they have inherited their constitution or their First and Second Amendment rights will be inherited to go onwards. And all that stuff that's happening is the definition of 2013. And also 13 is an important number in numerology because 13 is an important number in America. We are the number of 13 stars and stripes, originally 13 colonies. It's the power number. It's twisted decaphobia for most people, the fear of 13, but it's actually a very powerful number for America, and it's all coming together in 2013.
And 2013, is it like a catapult to other things, 2014, 15, where major events will occur then too, John?
Well, you know, I've always been saying, George, that this Lindsay Lohan of doomsday dates, which has finally come and gone, this Hollywood starlet of end times, 2012, December 21st, once it's passed us by, we're really going to kick into a even more rapid acceleration of history. That in this book that I'm going to have out in about a week, Nostradamus 2012, The End of End Times, will be an ebook on hogueprophecy.com. I talk about how, if anything, 2012 could be a marker for when things really started to pick up, not end up in a kumbaya, hug your new age rock crystal and think positive thoughts. And that kind of stuff now is not going to happen. We're going to have to face our future now as it relentlessly comes into our present without any distractions of Mayan calendars or harmonic convergences. And face it and see that lifting of consciousness, if there is such a thing, comes when people become en masse concerned about climate change, concerned about global warming, concerned about population and sustainability of the society, concerned about the systemic failure of our major systems that make the society function. You know, to me, that's the sign of somebody becoming more collectively conscious if they start noticing that and addressing that rather than fondling their rock crystals, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, we've had, you remember, we were on the panel down at the Conscious Life Expo, and I kind of said something similar to that, and it was interesting for me to observe the crowd. They were kind of like embarrassingly smiling because they were all saying, oh, we just have to think of positive things and everything will change, and the cows will come home and Pollyanna will be fine. And you know, I had to look at all the folks out there, and I said, you know, you seem to all harbor a deep negativity towards negativity as something not to face, but something to ignore. And that is exactly the kind of stuff that Saturn in Scorpio, which had already started a few days around that time when Saturn entered Scorpio. I think it happened that weekend when we were doing the Conscious Life Expo. It was like the message is, no, face and celebrate the things you've got to change and reorganize. And the other thing that I would say about next year or this year now is the motto is get real or get in trouble.
Get real. I like that. What about end times, John? You know, a lot of people think we're in the stages of end times right now. Do you see 2013 as part of that?
No, because at least, you know, just looking at prophetic literature, you know, the one thing I've been trying to say, you know, the first show I did in public was a radio show about the harmonic convergence. And it's funny how it's 25 years later and full circle, I've kind of been a sympathetic skeptic, that is an investigator into prophecy, but kind of trying to explain to people that there are no end times as such, that there's actually every time, I mean, one of the Judeo-Christian tradition people in it try to make end times, but the Mayan calendar was never an end time. Nostradamus, people who tried to stretch him into having some association with 2012, and many of them were my colleagues on these documentaries, if they'd actually read Nostradamus, they'd know that he didn't have any association with that, and his idea of at least the timeline of his ending of his history, it doesn't mean the world's going to end, but his ending was almost 1,800 years from now, in 3797. But then he goes on to talk about a kind of interplanetary colonization, it seems, of the human race, because he's talking for the first time about astrological signs as places, rather than figures of astrological poetry, the constellation of Aquarius and Cancer. We may live on stars in those realms 1,800 years from now. And he basically said that the human race will be perpetually alive, especially once it's out in space like that. If it's living in Aquarius and Cancer, it's not trapped on one world.
Is this going to be one of those years that people just kind of like tuck away and forget about as we move into 14 and 15 and onward?
Well, I don't think so. I think this year is, I mean, people will try. I mean, it's a human nature to keep the head in the sand when especially when the bill has come. You know, it's sort of like if there's been a big party and here comes the bill, and now people are thinking, oh, gosh, you know, how much money am I going to put in the tip? Maybe I'll let somebody else do it. And there's a lot of that energy involved. But the difference of this time, unlike 2000, the year 2000, which was kind of the big went, and there was a period there where people just threw up their hands and said, ah, well, there's nothing coming to happen. We even had Fukuyama talking about the end of history that was going to happen, and people were still believing that history was coming to an end somehow. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, and then we started accelerating to a whole other set of challenges as a human race. And those are continuing to accelerate. I mean, time wave zero did not happen. Terence McKenna's theory that time was going to come to a singularity on the 21st of December 2012, it didn't happen. He was wrong. Jose Arguelles, most of his theories, which he admitted were not really tied to what Maya people actually said their calendar meant, a lot of that was wrong. It didn't happen. I mean, we did not become collectively conscious on that time. And because, as I try to explain in this book, there are a lot of mystics that will tell you that consciousness is not a collective phenomenon. It's an individual phenomenon. And I mean, one layman's way to compare that is to simply say, do you ever see an army of Buddhas coming to save the world? Did you ever see an army of Christs, an army of Muhammads? When these founders of religions appear, they're all alone. And their path has been self-observation and study of the mysteries. And so that's, at least in a layman's term, an indication that people just don't get contact enlightened high. Although these people can help the collective better understand their spiritual nature. And the founder, you know, a handful of people have done very much to help us look at the future of our enlightenment evolution. But it's individual. And the other way of proving that is every time we come to this situation where people are all expecting to get contact high enlightenment, it never happens. Should be enough indication objectively that maybe we're barking up the wrong tree of Dharma here.
Yeah, that could be. Well, you know, John, We've looked at these years as they've come, as they've gone. Let's look at Nostradamus for a moment. Does he pinpoint any specific year that we're going into for any kind of event?
Well, the astrology of Nostradamus does talk a little bit about 2013.
It does.
It never talked about 2012, but it does talk about 2013. It also talks about the very pivotal years that are coming up are 2015 and 2016, which is a window for what could be, you know, I spent 100,000 words talking about this in my book, Nostradamus, The War with Iran, but in brief here on the show, there are a number of very clear, geographically describing prophecies that talk about the Strait of Hormuz, about Persia, Iran, about the Arabian Gulf, which is what the Arabs call the Persian Gulf, and a ship, fleet of ships melting and sinking in that Arabian Gulf, and the Ismailites coming out of Karmania, which is the Iranian side of the Strait of Hormuz, and charging out to fight these fleets, and a number of other things imply that the window for this war, which would be the most catastrophic war we've ever seen in the Middle East to date, would be at the time when Mars and Saturn are equally fiery. And in that prophecy, it's an astrological window for those periods of 2015 and 2016. What I also said in the book, and this was done long before Barack Obama was reelected, I said in the book that it would be Barack Obama who would be the president who would have to face the choice of either finding a diplomatic solution with Iran or pushing the button on a major war. And But even when I said that, I said that I, for argument's sake, I looked at the possibility of a Romney presidency, and I said that the problem is that this momentum for this war has been planned since 92, since the end of the Cold War, by neoconservatives and others in the military-industrial complex, that it's kind of carried presidents along with it. And they might be able to nuance the greater grand strategy, but it'll be a very interesting to see because of this astrology in Nostradamus. It also looks at 2013 and 2015. This is one thing that happens where it shows peace is possible. There's a window for peace. And so of the two possible presidents to be around at the time, Barack Obama, I said in the book that if I'm right, if my interpretations are right, then Barack Obama will be in his second term, and he will be the one that has a choice to find a diplomatic solution in the 11th hour, or we're all going to see a war that will impact everybody on the planet. Not a single person will be left unaffected by a major war in the Persian Gulf. And a lot of very nasty surprises, that the kind of nasty surprises we haven't seen since powers went to war in 1914 after a long period of only theory with their new modern, more powerful weapons. I mean, this very day.
So this has the makings, though, of a third world war, John, doesn't it?
This very day, in fact. The Iranians made the people potentially in the war aware that they are test firing ship destroying missiles in the Strait of Hormuz. And it's something I've been saying for years that the Iranians, I have been procuring carrier busting missiles. And I also said that in another few years, they may actually possess anti-ship ballistic missiles that are variants from what the Chinese have perfected. With the very idea of ending the hegemony of carrier fleets in the world. And it makes sense. It takes no Nostradamus to understand that your adversaries, if they see that you have this ability to send your carriers all over the world, then you must find a way to break the keels of those carriers. Well, that window is closing on the mid-2010s, and there's descriptions of Nostradamus which describe it happening. And I must say that I'm also the guy who looked at some of Nostradamus' prophecies about the Great Crusader army coming into Mesopotamia, and that army would lose to their enemy, their law. The enemy of the law should prevail, the law being the Sharia law. I mean, we lost in Iraq. I mean, I'll say it. I mean, everybody wants to forget we were even there. Yeah. You don't win a war by sticking your tail between your legs and going in the middle of the night out in December of 2011 so that that nobody will throw stones at you or something like that. We lost. And that's going to be rammed home this year by what's going on with Syria. Although I think Assad will be fighting back longer than people expect. I don't see his regime going down any time before March.
He's not going to give up without a fight.
No, he's not going to give up without a fight. And everything is developing towards a larger grand strategy, which will bring some kind of similar Libyan-style involvement of we're already indirectly involved. The West, NATO, will find a way, and it will be over the threat of chemical weapons being used or being procured by a number of the quote-unquote freedom fighters that are actually Al-Qaeda and Salafa groups. I mean, the other thing to look at in which I'm going to look at in my predictions for 2013 is the future of Mohamed Morsi, the president of Egypt. That is also, he's a benchmark for what's going to happen in the Middle East. And unfortunately, I've already made predictions that he would, find a way to turn the place into Islamic constitution, Islamist.
Point. John, we're going to take the break and come right back with you. More and phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, astrologer Linda Sherman joins us. Her latest work, Fast Forward. She'll be looking at the future when we come back next hour. When we come back in a moment, John Hogue and some phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Hogue with us, and of course, your phone calls. John, when's your new ebook come out again?
Well, I have two coming out. I've got Nostradamus 2012, The End of End Times, which is intended to be a last word and a fast look forward into what's really going on with the Mayan calendar and the coming years, the roaring 2020s being one of them. That's coming out, if not this weekend, then next weekend. And then depending on how fast I can put it together, I'm going to try to get predictions for 2013 out at the end of January or early February.
Knowing you, Mr. Prolific, you will.
I'm a termite queen producing books.
Let's go to Los Angeles. Frank's with us, first-time caller. Frank, welcome to the Coast to Coast.
Yes, George Norrie and John Hogue.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. My name is Frank from L.A., and I would like to tell you something about prophecy. I'd like you to hear me out, please, from beginning to end, if you would.
Keep it concise.
We'll keep it concise. The Mayan calendar ended December 21st. It was not the end of the world, but it was the end of a world age. And a new age is coming. What is going to happen in January of 2013 is the rapture. The rapture is going to occur, and Nostradamus' prediction of the Antichrist, he was born February the 5th, 1962. February the 5th, 2013, he'll be 51. 5 and 1 makes 6, and 6 is a mark of Satan. The rise of the new world order headed by the Antichrist and his public emergence will occur after February the 5th, 2013. He'll reign for 7 years. February of 2020 will be the return of Jesus Christ to the earth to set up a 1,000-year paradise millennial reign.
A 1,000-year reign as a savior, yes.
Yeah, but now, the reason why I say it's so important that we share the news of the rapture of the church occurring in January of 2013, because the Antichrist and the New World Order cannot rise to power until the church goes up. And
okay,
of course,
Frank, I think you've given us a lot to think about. What I'm going to ask you is this: if the rapture doesn't happen in January this month, will you take a complete refreshing look at your interpretations of eschatological prophecies of the Judeo-Christian tradition? Or will you find some way to say, well, just it didn't happen, must be something God's will or something?
As Harold Camping has said a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is the Judeo-Christian, for one thing, the whole concept of the rapture wasn't even in Christian thinking until 1706, when certain Protestant evangelicals began to look at the concept of tribulation rapture. At the very scantiest amounts of statements by St. Peter and St. Paul, a whole idea of people being taken up into the clouds, with or without their clothes, into the sky, to wait out the tribulation until of 7 years, and then to come back and help Jesus Christ rule for 1,000 years. Actually, that's where Hitler got his idea for the 1,000-year Reich, but that's another story that I talk about in the Messiah's book, which looks at this tradition. When will these people who make these statements, who are so absolutely sure of what they're saying, when those dates and things go by with nothing happening, do these people ever have any shame? Do they ever kind of sit down and think, maybe I'm projecting on this, and maybe the mystery of Jesus Christ or other religions has a whole other thing in mind than what I'm perhaps projecting onto this? You never see the mindset of people who just again and again predict a specific time for this happening, whether it's the Mayan calendar, whether it's Richard Noon and his May 5th, 2000 tilt of the Earth's axis. These people never come up and say, God, I'm sorry, I was completely wrong. Must be something wrong with me, not Jesus Christ or the rest of the mystery. You never see this. I predict that you never will see this. And it takes no Nostradamus to predict that.
Well, you know, and as Harold Camping, he came out, he said it was going to happen in May, then he said it was going to happen in October,
yeah,
and then it never happened at all, and, you know, they just fade away to oblivion, don't they?
Yeah, they just disappear. I mean, where's Richard Noon coming up and saying that the axis didn't shift? Where are those guys who had the Jupiter effect, where we're going to tilt, California was going to sink in 1982? Where are those people? Why don't they come out and say, at least, I'm sorry.
I was wrong, or my dates are off a little bit.
I mean, I was on a show, I can't even remember what it was, but I mean, in my work, you read for a dozen years documented what I get right and wrong. And when people point out something I get wrong, actually to have them coast to coast, let's see.
You've done it. We've talked about some things.
Yeah. I just say, I was wrong. I'm human. But it's like such an ego trip for people in the forecasting game. For them, it is a game, I think, rather than a calling, that people who cannot admit their human failings or misreading their signs, mm-hmm. like great predictors like Jean Dixon, she often said, well, I misread my symbols. There's a whole book that Hewlin Casey wrote about his father, Edgar Casey, trying to figure out why he got certain things wrong, how he got in the way, how he could improve. That kind of humility is really required to have some accuracy in this field.
That's right. What did you think of Edgar Casey, John?
I loved him. He was one of the major bridges in my life to what I do today. And the other thing that he taught me is how important it is to document everything you say in a way that it can be proved that you said it at a specific time, because that's how you vindicate your abilities, and also in his case, how you can then examine why it's wrong. Now, it could be wrong because there's free will. It could be wrong because one misread the symbols. It could be wrong because it's simply wrong, and one is imagining things. I mean, this is one of the subplots of my work, is really to discover in prophecy how the human mind projects itself into what it sees. And the great trick, the great effort of somebody like me, or even somebody who is listening, is to the interpreter and the one who's listening to the interpreter and the prophet themselves all have to take stock in what biases of their mind and projections of their subconscious might actually color what they say and see.
All right. Next up, we go to Lava Hot Springs in Idaho. Kat's with us. West of the Rockies. Kat, go ahead. You're on with John Hogue.
Hi, George and John.
Hi,
this is a little question about President Barack Obama. How do you think he's going to do in this next term? I'm a hand reader, and he's got a little glitch in his heart line about age 52 to 54. And some other people are saying he may have some health problems.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I'm still trying to get my head around whether he, you know, my whole thing with him is a year before he actually ran for president, I was talking about how my own oracular work showed that his timing to be president was no sooner than 2012, and it's all documented in Hogue Prophecy. I basically said in the 3rd of March 2007 in a article that if he went and pushed his agenda to 2008, he'd come to his presidency too soon. So the question that I'm looking at as I'm putting together my predictions for 2013, which will have a major part focusing on his second term.
Well, do you think that's why he did
that
so well?
Let me finish, is whether he has actually come to his destiny with the baggage of his immaturity, or whether we're going to see him be a leader first. I mean, it was interesting during the tragedy of the shooting at Sandy Hook that he made a kind of a Freudian slip for me. He kind of said, I'm a father first, and then I'm the president in a press conference. And it's an honest statement, but it just dawned on me suddenly that this is the problem with issues of leadership. Can he be a president and a father, like Lincoln could be with his kids? I really felt like there was a priority that didn't put the presidency first yet. So that's a sign to me that he's still working out this immaturity issue. The other thing I said is that if he picked If he picked the Secretary of State after Clinton as John Kerry, that would be a major mistake. And it looks like he's going to pick John Kerry, which gets him more tied into the skull and bones connections of John Kerry and Bush and a lot of other people. And that's something I've talked about at length in my book, Nostradamus and the Antichrist, which looks at the major candidates that decode their name into Mabus, the final enigma name that Nostradamus gives for the third Antichrist. Now, there are a number of people that fit that. Barack Obama is only one of them. Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, George W. Bush, all very easily decoded their names into Mabus. So, you know, a lot of people hear that and they think I'm calling the president Antichrist. I'm not. I'm saying that he, as a scholar, I have to say, look, his name is there, and maybe we don't understand exactly what Mabus means. Maybe it's not the Antichrist. Maybe it's somebody who is influenced by the Antichrist or attacked by the Antichrist. And it brings back to your question about his health. I don't, at this point, see anything that tells me that his health is in trouble.
Right. Hillary's in trouble, but
yes, definitely, yes, which is intriguing because she still has a destiny to perhaps become president in 2016. I don't think it's as serious as it's being, you know, spinned up what's going on with her in this regard. And she has had these problems before with clots, so it's, you know, we have a pope that has had a couple brain aneurysms, and he's still pope, and he's still, Pope Benedict is still there. So, you know, again, another level of work in this work, since one that's doing predictions about current events, it becomes harder and harder to really capture the facts behind the hyperbole and spin. As our mass media becomes more and more interested in ratings and sensation rather than reporting the news, and it's becoming more and more daunting for somebody in my field to kind of cut through all the chest beating and Piers Morganing of the news.
Let's go to Latanya in Radcliffe, Kentucky, wildcard line. Hey, Latanya, go ahead.
Hi, my question is, with the government controlling the military as strongly as they do, are they purposely setting us up to fail? In New York?
No, I don't think so, and that's an assumption. I mean, what we have to always watch when we ask our questions. This is for all of us. One has to always step back and say, upon what given, what assumption do I ask a question, or upon what assumption do I even do a whole lifetime's work? For instance, Richard Noon trying to figure out the tilt of the Earth's axis was based on a false presumption. The poor man worked for 25 years, wrote an amazing book, 5-5-2000, very fascinating book. I've got it, and it's still a proud recipient in my library. But it was all wrong, and it's a lesson for all of us that we can get caught up in something that just seems absolutely true. We can not catch ourselves cherry-picking evidence that helps support our claim. And then we have a huge system, and some people build their systems to a point where they're on talk circuits and they've got a whole following, and it's all complete bunk. So the military, if you ask me where the military is going, it's for the last few almanacs on the future, I've been talking about how the military is in a business crisis. The military-industrial complex is needing to find new markets for a long-term generational containment of potential threats, which is the best way for the military to function, because if you actually go to war, you do risk. You don't want to go to war and lose. I mean, even Hitler, if you read his conversations that were transcribed, thought of World War II as a problem that it wanted to end quickly so he could get on with what he wanted to do with his thousand-year Reich. And it's surprising to read him saying at the dinner table how much he really wished the war was over and didn't want to be perpetuated. So right now what's happening, and I talk about it at length in my Iran, Nostradamus Iran book, is that we were in a three-year process of rearming the Gulf states and preparing them to contain Iran. And to build up, you'll see it already now, the British are starting to move their assets into the Persian Gulf. The French have already done it. There is an attempt to create a more connected alliance that will either force Iran to sign a treaty against nuclear proliferation, or it will be in place after some very lucrative rearmament contracts have financed and flushed new business into the military industrial complex, is then going to hit Iran. And then the next long-term plan is already in place to contain China. And it's, you know, you don't want to lose. I don't know. That sounds
nobody
like,
knows.
That sounds like internet conspiracy to me. If you lose a war, did Hitler want to lose against the Soviet Union to generate more people coming closer to him in the Third Reich? No, it destroyed the Third Reich. And a war that completely upends the oil flow of the world will be very destructive to the United States, not helpful.
Good point. Let's go to one more call here, John, maybe two. Jeff in Baltimore, Maryland, first-time caller. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, George and John, Happy New Year to you all.
You too, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
John, I heard you earlier talking about global warming. Do you really believe in global warming? And if so, do you think it's natural cycle or man-made?
Okay, the first off, I don't do anything by belief, because belief is, for me, a euphemism for qualified ignorance. What I do is I've been studying climate change since 1979. And one of my hobbies is I record the weather in wherever I live. And even in my own findings, I can see changes that are happening. I have looked, there is more evidence, mountains and mountains of evidence to support a artificial man-made induced tipping of the climate. There's more evidence than the evidence that we have copiously of the Holocaust. But even though the Germans did a very fine job calculating and categorizing their crimes, there are still people out there that don't believe it happened. The mountain of information that has been developed over centuries to show that there is definitely a connection is awesome in its size, and yet there are a lot of people who, you know, still believe the Earth is flat. So, you know, the point is, I don't believe in climate change. I see it, and the sooner you and other people see it, the sooner the sleeping giant of our creativity will be there to respond to it. Now, the climate is...
Clock's going to get us here, John. We're right here at the end. John Hogue with us. Predictions. We'll be back.